All right, it is Sunday morning, and it's time to talk to Bruce Jenkins of The Chronicle. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Marty. How's it going?
Well, pretty good. Last night's pitching matchup, I'll tell you, it lived up to the billing, and as Pablo Lopez really showed me something pitching in that park under those conditions. And Gausman, Bruce, it's splitter, 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 and fastball, and that's it. And it was a great game.
Yeah, I really think Gausman has established himself as one of the best. He's one of the best pitchers in the game right now.
Yeah.
Every time out, he's extremely sharp. That splitter can take a toll on your arm. I just hope his arm holds up through all those splitters.
You know, I was thinking that this morning. You know, I swear I was thinking that this morning. And remember, Roger Craig taught the splitter to so many pitchers.
Sure.
They lost velocity and all that kind of stuff. I thought of that this morning, that maybe you have to mix in the slider, which he didn't do last night. Posey really stayed with the splitter. I think that's a valid point.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for a lot of guys around the bigs, there's so many pitches in play now. You know, the cutter and the splitter, the slider, the curve, the circle change, and who knows what else they're going to try up there. You know, the knuckle curve, you know, and each one has a different grip and a different kind of slot. And it puts a real toll on your arm to have that much torque with that much different grips and that many different grips. And, you know, you see guys go down, all of a sudden they're just, he's got forearm tightness, and next thing you know, it's Tommy John surgery. Mm. I certainly don't wish that on anybody. But, you know, Gausman, he looks like he's got a pretty smooth delivery that works for him, and it sure is working right now.
Mm. It was a good game. Giants let it get away late. Which, you know, happened. Two things happened for me. One, Bill and John Shea just talked about it quite a bit, and that is bringing Santos in to start the tough inning because the Rogers and McGee were not available because they were used Friday night in the game. The Giants had well in hand. But Santos fell behind, and then Posey didn't call that fastball. Posey tried to, you know, use the slider, and it didn't work, and he put someone on base, and bang, the home run happens. That's one. And number two is, Bruce, you bring in the closer in a game where the save is not on the line, and before you know it, the tying run's at the plate.
Yeah, well, I certainly had no problem with Santos coming in. I mean, after his debut, there was so much talk about his stuff, and, you know, he looks ready, and he's definitely ready to get out there and see, show what he can do. And he tried to sneak a fastball by Aguilar, and oh my God, you can't hit a ball any harder. I don't need to see the exit velocity on that. You can't hit it any harder. It was just a screaming line drive, one of those Johnny Bench line drives that leaves the yard about 8 feet off the ground. So that was a real rude awakening for him. But he'll be back, and you know, I'm anxious to see Duvall out there his next outing. You know, they're going to throw him out there, but you got to be careful, as you say. I mean, careful with your pitch selection. I mean, a guy like Aguilar, he sees 98. He doesn't flinch.
No, and it's the major leagues. It's not the minor leagues. And, you know, you have to throw a quality pitch. And if you fall behind, you just can't lay a fastball down the middle. You still have to have a quality pitch. So what do you think about the closer coming in the non-closing situation?
Well, that's always a little risky, you know. I mean, I don't know. I didn't have a big problem with it. We just have to see how his arm holds up. He's gonna be called on a lot, and you know, you're expected to come out there every night or every other night, and you know, most of those guys, they'll never tell you they're not ready. They're always going to say they're ready to go. So we'll see. I didn't have a huge problem with it, but it's something to look at.
Yeah, I just see, you know, you watch enough games, they bring in that closer in the non-closing situation, and before you know it, you have a closing situation. And I remember back, Jose Mesa was a closer. I forget who he was pitching for at that point, but the game was well in hand, and all of a sudden the game wasn't, and he was in the bullpen sleeping. And then they had to wake him up and bring him into the game. He didn't know what happened. And
yeah,
closers are funny. I'm telling Bruce, they're funny. They are.
Yeah, they're not funny when you're Steve Howe and you're doing cocaine in the bullpen, but that's a whole different story. They're funny. Quisenberry was funny. There's a funny guy.
Kent DeColvey, yeah.
Yeah.
Guys like that. Hey, you wrote an interesting story the other day. I think you wrote it. about the animals in the ballpark. How about that?
Well, they called me up that morning and said, hey, how about running down the top five animals in the ballpark? And I go, okay. I mean, you know, I did a little quick research on all of them, and, you know, there's some great stuff in there. I mean, Charlie Finley, I love, you know, he had that mule that he first hauled out in Kansas City A's. And it was a time when, you know, they bring him out from behind the center field fence. And, well, one day they brought him out, and the game had already started. Well, whatever. We got a fourth outfielder now. Charlie O is out there. Give him a glove.
It was beautiful.
Well, tons of cats. You know, I was going to say tons of cats on the field and over the years. And the A's had the famous one where Tony La Russa saved him, and it kind of led to he and his wife founding their great animal protection agency. And Bumgarner, you know, riding out on a horse, that was one of the all-timers. So good stuff.
Yeah, and Candlestick always had some animals somewhere living there because it was so crazy. They had the opossum or I think a raccoon. A raccoon came out at one point, and I was thinking back on the family section, which was always rather strange. It was under an overhang because it was back from the football seating. And living under the family section where it was a family of foxes. So, and not Charlie Fox either. So
no. Oh, gosh. Yeah, raccoons. You might try to pick up a cat, but don't try to do it with a raccoon. They're fearless, as I find out some nights as we at our nightly garbage wars with the raccoons.
But the whole, I guess the motivation for the story to some degree was the bunny, the rabbit. At the ballpark.
Yeah.
What did you think of
that? Yeah, that was the catalyst. I mean, you know, we were all kind of looking at this thing, and Kruko and Kuiper were completely baffled. What the hell? Kruko goes, what gate did they come in with that thing? But,
really?
You know, it turns out it was a huge, huge bunny, but very docile and totally enjoyed being, you know, stroked on the head by those two, the couple. And, you know, it turns out it's a little like Kruko has a dog to protect him. They, mm-hmm. The bunny is a therapy. It's a take some of the stress off for the woman who lost her business and has really had a hard time and just really has gotten a lot of comfort from that bunny. So good on them.
Yeah, and I'm glad. It's funny. How did they bring the? You know, you can't hide it. You know, how do you walk in with a rabbit?
But they had to have arranged it beforehand. And you know, the rabbit was vaccinated, so it's all good.
Right, he had the proper papers.
Yeah.
But, you know, it reminded me of the story I told last night. You know, the Cubs in 1945, you know, with the goat. You know, they wouldn't let the goat in. They Murphy, who was named for the despised owner of the Cubs in the early 1900s. And they wouldn't let the goat in, and they were cursed forever.
Boy, that one had some legs, didn't it? I mean, we may never see the rabbit again, but they still talk about the goat. I mean,
the goat had legs, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
John wrote an interesting story today about strikeouts and hits, and it's a very hot topic, Bruce, you know, you've talked about moving the mound back and all that kind of stuff. And I thought of something this morning, and Bill commented on it with WOTUS. You know, maybe make, instead of moving the mound back, three balls and three strikes. So, you know, you get 0-2, you can't waste three pitches. You have to throw more strikes in there. If you throw more strikes, there's more chance of a ball being put in play. And I tell you, I don't think it's that radical. I think it's something they should think about. So maybe I'm crazy, but I thought about it this morning.
But three balls is a walk?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, I didn't advocate the pitcher's mound. I just brought it up and talked to Kruko a little bit, and his answer was, "Who knows? I mean, you have to see it. It sounds a little alarming to me, but no, I can't go for three balls as a walk. I mean, if you're a pitcher, that just doesn't work. That's too radical for me. But again, if they do try it somewhere in like probably the Atlantic League where they tend to dump all these things." Yeah, I want to camp out in the Atlantic League, by the way, and watch all this stuff. And
it's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And look, and the thing too, as Woe said, who would have thought you'd ever see seven-inning doubleheaders or a relief pitcher that's got to face three batters and all the changes that are coming in the Atlantic League. So we'll see. But that's what I came up with this morning. So we'll see where that goes. Hey,
sure.
Baseball Digest. Were you a reader of Baseball Digest?
Not really. I read the sporting news religiously, which kept track of all the teams and tried to watch every game that came on television. But I did see it occasionally, but I wasn't a religious reader or subscriber or anything.
Yeah, Rick Cerrone, the PR director for the Yankees,
sure.
is now the editor. And they've come up with something really nice, and that is they gave Willie Mays the first annual Baseball Digest Life Achievement Award, which I thought was very nice for him. They could have given it to anybody. And sort of as Bill and John talked about it, you know, the Hall of Fame does this every few years. Well, Baseball Digest is going to do it every year, and I think that's good. I like it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to come out of the gate, you got to make it people notice, and they made the best possible choice they could. You know, it's going to be a tough act to follow. You know, I don't think Manny Mota is going to be the next guy, or John the Count Montefusco is number two. You know, but no, that's a wonderful thing. You know, Mays is getting a lot of wonderful attention. Mm-hmm. He's about to turn 90, and it's just that's very, very distinguished honor, because the Baseball Digest, like you say, there, that's a hallowed institution in the game, and great to see.
Boy, talking about hallowed institutions, remember Vern Rapp, who was the manager of the Cardinals, and he came out with no facial hair, no this, no that, and he lasted about 6 days, and they fired him right around this weekend. Think about it, early in the season. And Ken Boyer took over, but I'll never forget that Vern Rapp and his no facial hair.
Yeah, well, it was 1977, and they were looking at the Giants were looking at Vern Rapp to replace Bill Rigney. That was Rigney's last managing job, and the Cardinals swept in and got him. Rapp was a St. Louis guy, but man, what a bad choice. I mean, this is a guy who sent Lou Brock up to the plate as a pinch hitter and then took him out for Mike Anderson. I mean, nope. Just absolutely, I don't care what the circumstances are. Once you got Brock up there, you don't yank him back for somebody nobody's heard of. He called Ted Simmons a loser during one heated exchange. And, you know, no facial hair, that's just not going to work in the 70s. Hrabowski simply ignored it. He grew back his Fu Manchu mustache. And so it was just this horribly tempestuous reign that he had, and he didn't last the month.
No. No, it's Burn incredible. Rap. It's April. Come on, they knocked it out in April.
Well, so it's a good thing that the Giants went to Altobelli, and who clicked right away. It didn't end so well, but I think that was a much better choice than Vern Rapp.
No, come on. Vern Rapp in San Francisco? I don't think so.
Oh, my God, no.
That was not going to work in the 70s, I'll tell you that.
No.
Ken Johnson, 1964. I always remember this one, who pitched a no-hitter, but he lost the game. And the final error that allowed the run to score that beat him was by Nellie Fox. And you never think of Nellie Fox ever making an error, but Ken Johnson lost a no-hitter. How about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's scoreless in the ninth inning, and Pete Rose, this, by the way, he's got a no-hitter going against a lineup with Rose, Pinson, and Frank Robinson in it. So, I mean, this is totally legit. And Rose tries to bunt, which to me, I mean, if it's a six-run game and he's trying to break up a no-hitter with a bunt, that's a little bit lame. But this is a scoreless game, so he tries to bunt his way on, and Johnson throws the ball away. So now he's on second, and then Chico Ruiz hits a line drive off Johnson's shin, and it goes over to Bob Aspromonte, who throws him out. So now you got a guy in third, and that's when Nellie Fox booted the grounder by Pinson, and you know, just shocking. So he gets the no-hitter. It's like he loses the game. It's like he said. People always come up to me and goes, "Hey, boy, what a great game, and what a lousy break." It's like you're congratulating him and feeling sorry for him at the same time.
Well, all the no-hitters in the history of baseball, that one always stands out. Ken Johnson, he lost the game.
And yes.
That was a pretty good one. Hey, before we take another historical moment, did you see Tatis last night on the two homers and what he did? What did you think of that?
I loved every second of it, and I love Bauer's response. You know, Bauer's a real cocky guy who pulls, you know, little stunts of his own, like pitching with one eye, you know, closed, and he just exudes, you know, the kind of swagger that I think the game could use a little bit more of. And Tatis is right there with him. you know, he hits the ball out. Now he's imitating all his little mannerisms around the bases. Bauer later said, I love it. You got to be able to take it. You don't hit the guy. You know, you go on, and then maybe I'll get him, and then maybe I'll do something. You know, they got some fun out of it. Even Bauer saw the beauty of what Tatis did. You know, this is the hottest hitter in the game right now. I mean, yet another great aspect of that tremendous rivalry that's building between those teams.
Boy, well, Tatis hits two homers last night off of Bauer. Hit two homers the day before off of Kershaw. So baseball has records for everything. The first time anyone has hit two homer games consecutively off two Cy Young Award winners. How about that for a record?
Yeah. Let me throw a historical note at you. Last night, the Houston game, Odorizzi got hurt, and they brought in a kid named Kent Emmanuel in the first inning with one out. He goes the rest of the way. Dusty leaves him in. He goes 8 2/3. In his major league debut. So who was the last guy to go longer than that in relief? He was a Giant in 1974.
The count. Okay.
Oh, well, Ron Bryant started the game. Right. Yeah, Ron Bryant started the game, got nobody out. Montefusco, this is his debut. He got to the stadium like an hour before the game started. He goes the rest of the way and gets the win. What a thing.
Beautiful.
Nine innings in relief.
Well, you know, the count was such an attraction on those Saturday nights against the Dodgers when he first broke in, and then with the Reds and everything else. The count earned his money here. He really did.
Oh, he did. Yeah. He was just a ton of fun. And, you know, talk about a guy who liked to show off a little bit. And, you know, it worked. He backed it up an awful lot of the time.
Well, the last one I want to mention to you, and Bill, I'm sure, has got some thoughts for you this morning. 2001, Ricky Henderson breaks the Babe's walk record. And when I looked at the number, I just, 2,063 walks. 2,063 walks for Ricky Henderson. Bruce, I'll tell you something. I know we take him for granted a little bit. He was out here. But I'm telling you, when you look at the history of baseball, how is Ricky Henderson not in, like, the top three or four of all time?
Well, he's the greatest leadoff man ever. I mean, right. I hope that's clear to everyone. Yeah, so that's his place. You know, hit a bunch of home runs. Of course, unbelievable base stealer. Hit for average. You know, I was so lucky to cover him. my first years on the beat, I'm covering him breaking into the game, setting those records, and watching him every night, home and away. And you know, it's just, but the fact that he had such a good eye up there is just especially great. And you know, a guy like that would be just so valuable today. I mean, I don't know about his strikeout numbers, but I don't think they weren't as gaudy as Babe Ruth's, that's for sure. And you know, Ruth had maybe more than 2,000 fewer plate appearances than Ricky, but still, to break that record of Ruth's is astounding. And another, some maybe overlooked aspect of the Ricky's greatness.
Well, but you're putting Ricky Henderson on base 2,000 times. It's not like you're putting
bad
Ernie.
Ideas.
It's not like you're putting Ernie Lombardi, you know, who couldn't run, you know, or Benji Molina or someone like that. You're putting Ricky Henderson on 2,000 times. That to me is amazing.
Well, it is, and he once he got there, he didn't disappoint. I remember really early on, he had a lot of trouble with left-handed pitchers. You know how they'll get the leg up. You don't know what he's going to do. And Ricky, there were some guys he just couldn't figure out. And Dave Lopes said once he can steal off any right-hander who ever lived every single time. I don't care what era you're talking about. You're done. And once he figures out the lefties, it's all over. And he did, and it was.
Wow. Well, I'm glad we could touch on that. By the way, the Marlins announced Ross Detweiler will be the starting pitcher for them today. So we'll see with the weather. And George Costa, of course, the senior person at the ballpark who takes care of everything, security and all that, says we'll monitor the situation. But as of now, the game is settled and set to start at 1:05. So Detweiler is going on the hill. Bill, your thoughts this morning?
Well, I want to go back to that game yesterday with Bruce a little bit. You know, we watched Kevin Gausman just so electric for eight innings, and he only threw 101 pitches. back in the day, there's no way you're getting a starting pitcher out of that game going into the ninth inning. I want to hear what Bruce's thoughts were. Do you think they talked to him? Do you think they sat him down saying, do you want to go into ninth? Or did you think that decision was made because he was the third man up in the eighth inning? And I just want to kind of hear your ideas. Only 101 pitches, and he threw over 110 his last start, and he really did not have a lot of people on base where he had stress innings.
Yeah, I think in a close game when he's due up third, you know, there's a good chance you're not going to want him up there in that situation. I think that was I hope that was an overriding factor, because without that factor, I don't know how you take him out of that game. I'm sure he didn't want to come out. You don't know that, you know. But usually, if a manager says, you know, are you good for another inning? If he's sailing, he's going to say, yeah. You know, I mean, you don't want anybody in the dugout hearing a guy say, no, I'm done. That's good for me. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. That doesn't happen, you know. And if it does, you sure don't want to hear it. So, we've talked about this so many times. I can't take a guy out if he's cruising. I just can't do it. Let him get into some trouble, you know. And I don't count a blooper to right, you know. Let him get in some, you know, in a crisis where it looks like things might be a little bit unraveling and go to the bullpen. I just think they deserve that, and it, you know, as you know, if you're left in a game where there might be some doubt about you coming out, but you're left in the game and you finish the job, what does that do for your confidence? Not just that night, but like for weeks, you know.
Well, and sometimes Bruce, they say go out there until one guy gets on, and then I'll take you out, because who knows? He goes out there and hits three line drives right at three people in five pitches, and he's out of the inning. And that was another reflection I had in a postgame show. Let him go out. He only threw 101 pitches. He struck out the last guy, and he wasn't really in a lot of trouble. So, you know, I just reflect on that a little bit more. And when I look at it, it was only 101 pitches. And when you start looking at pitches per inning, my goodness, he was under 20 pitches every inning. So I thought maybe they went to him. Maybe he says, I'm done. But I just don't see Gausman saying, I'm done. We saw that last year in L.A., you know, when Kapler took him out and you saw how upset he was. But he's your ace of your staff. I think he should have went out there in the ninth.
Well, I see pinch hitting for him. You know, I think that was an overriding factor. You got to pinch hit in the eighth inning. And then next thing is his next start is against San Diego, and it'll be Friday night, I imagine. And he's got 6 days rest, so he probably could have squeezed another inning out of him.
Yep.
I can't wait to see Tatis against that splitter. That should be a treat.
I know. But it's going to be interesting. And look, it's, as I said before, it's only April. But this has been a good beginning to the baseball season. Right, Bruce?
This has been one of the best Aprils of, in memory. I mean, I don't have them all charted in my head. I can't remember being so excited on so many fronts. You know, watching that great quick pitch show, every fan should be onto that at late at night, the 1 hour wrap up, where they show they don't just show the highlights, they give you the announcers who were calling it at the time, which is a really, instead of stupid music, you know, but it's just captivating all the way through, all the stories that are coming, you know, Byron Buxton, you know, and when's Acuna and Soto coming back, and you know, watching Scherzer's latest outing, or Bumgarner, it's so great.
And the Cubs are hitting. How about that?
The Cubs are really hitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they ever didn't hit. Yeah, you know, with Baez and Contreras and Bryant and Rizzo, come on, they should always hit.
Oh, interesting. Well, great to talk to you, Bruce. Next weekend it's the Padres. I'm looking forward to catching up with you. So have a great day.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks a million.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins.